Welcome to Team White. This is Alex Linder in Northeast Missouri, and with me today, as always, is Jan in South Africa, where the power has just come back on. I guess they're in summer down there, and they have load shedding. And Jan, anything new on the electrical front down there?
Alex, these fucking people, they can't run, they can't generate electricity. Which, how many years have whites had electricity in Europe? I mean, weren't they putting on electrical lights in like the 1870s or 1880s?
Yeah, I think so.
So you're talking like 150 years of power generation. It should be really easy to just generate some fucking power for a certain number of people and use it, but not in South Africa. The power generating plants are breaking, and for some reason they can't quite fix them. And then then the blacks went and they built a really big power plant, and they said, oh, this power plant, which was some hideous amount of money, okay? Because like when the whites were building a power plant, it would be like 10 billion or 15 billion rand. When the blacks went and built one, they said, nah, it's going to cost 60 billion. Okay. And then they said, it's going to be 60 billion and then it's going to be problem solved for like 20 years. Well, they built it. They never finished it. It had all kinds of problems with it. Things exploded. Okay. Parts of it fucking exploded. All right. And, and all that happens is more black babies are being born all the time. The black population is growing. They need more power, more food, more everything, and they can't maintain the infrastructure that they need for themselves even. So,
well, who actually built the new plant?
Alex, I think they may have contracted some people to do it, but you see they don't just let somebody, they don't let, like, let's say the Japanese, for example, come and do everything their way. No, when South Africa does it, South Africa interferes with those people who have got plans and want to build it. So they're constantly interfering. They set up all kinds of other junk processes that interfere with the people who know what they're doing. And so at the end of the day, they themselves undermine and bugger up this whole thing. So I can't tell you off the top of my head who the actual contractors were and who did what. I almost think that there were some overseas people involved, but they also have all kinds of other rules, like local workers must be involved in this. And once they bring all their own stuff and their own junk and their own rules and their own requirements, and then they start, their methods don't work. And then they force their methods on somebody else, and then the whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket. So that's what happens in South Africa. So something that everybody else can do, you guys in America, you can generate power for 300 million people. Well, in South Africa, we can't generate power for 50 million or 60 million people. And it's no different in the neighboring states. The blacks in neighboring states also ran into the same fucking problems. So then the power goes off. That's why in Southern Africa, not just South Africa, but Southern Africa, places like Zimbabwe to the north of us, those blacks are into solar power. They're into solar power because the electricity blew up, like the electricity went to hell in a handbasket, you know, 15 years ago. And so they also muck around and they do things. Actually, I must one day show you some inventions that whites have come up with for all kinds of inventions for Africa. Amazing stuff. I was looking at something today. I was looking at all kinds of solar cooking using solar power, all the kinds of inventions whites have come up with in South Africa, and including tiny ones, things that blacks can use. I was looking at them just a couple of hours ago. I was looking at some of them. I was saying, very, very nice. And cheap as well, all of it. And it's all made by whites, Afrikaans-speaking whites. And they sell it from their business in Pretoria. And whites are the only people who come up with solutions, Alex. Whites are the only ones. And the others just...
Blacks create problems.
Dead on.
They never run out of problems to create.
Absolutely. Alex, sorry for interrupting, but you're absolutely right. And... they will have problems that you cannot even imagine.
What else is going on down there?
Actually, it's pretty quiet. The COVID stuff is not as big. There is one thing I saw the other day that's quite nasty. According to South African labor laws, It is legal to fire people who don't want to be vaccinated. It is legal to fire them. Huh. So there have been two labor court cases, and they both confirm that now. So if your employer wants to vax you and you don't want to be vaxed, your employer can fire you, and you've got nothing you can do about it. So that's probably the main thing. The other thing I will say, Alex, just generally, since you ask about South Africa – I can definitely see all kinds of indications, Alex, that we're in an economy that's worse than anything I've seen before. The other day, there's a advertising website that's run that's the biggest advertising online advertising website in South Africa. There are two big ones. One is Gumtree, but the other one is called OLX, and OLX, I think, comes from overseas, but I didn't know it, but it was owned by Afrikaans, a big Afrikaans company. And the other day, OLX just shut down suddenly without any warning. They just shut it down. And they later confirmed that, yes, they've shut down OLX. That's the end of OLX. And it's one of the biggest or the biggest online advertising companies. And I was even advertising some old stuff I was trying to get rid of that I don't need. And so I was quite horrified to see OLX suddenly shut down. And millions of people must have been going to that website. So that must show you that there's something wrong there. I had to go to the bank. I had to go to the bank in order to collect some stuff. And when I went to the banking branch at the huge shopping mall that's not too far away from me, and I went there, and the fucking banking branch has disappeared, just fucking gone. It's not there. Hmm. And I then had to phone them and say to them, like, where the fuck did the branch go to, you know? It's a big branch in a big shopping mall. And I've noticed in that shopping mall and some other shopping malls, Alex, I've seen a lot of places close, man. And I want to tell you that in the areas that I travel that are close to me, like Randburg areas, Alex, we've got entire buildings, office blocks. We've got entire office buildings that are empty. I don't know if you guys have got that in America, but we've got empty ones. And they weren't empty before COVID. And it's not one. Uh-huh. It's a bunch of them. And you can see lots and lots and lots. Alex, it could be, I can't tell you the percentage of buildings that have just suddenly become empty in the last three years or so. It's a lot, man. It's like, it could even be, I'm going to take a rough stab at this, but it could even be anything from 10 to 20% of the buildings that buildings that used to be filled from top to bottom, they're totally fucking empty. And banks have been, and now and watching these banks shutting down branches, that's also a sign that the economy can't be good. Though in my area where I live, the whites are all quite happy and they all seem to be working and not complaining, but the economy must be taking a beating, definitely.
So things are fairly steady there at least, but yeah, there's been some of that in the U.S. Basically in the U.S. they've, in all these major cities full of niggers and run by leftists, they basically declared they're not going to prosecute low-level crimes, and so people are running in the stores and ransacking them. The stores are boarded up. They're letting people out early. It's just complete mess in a lot of the big cities in the USA. Well, how about the rest of Africa? Is anything remarkable? How are the Muslim wars going?
Yeah,
the various fronts all over there. I think that's something that people, that's something here we don't really hear about much.
No. And even in South Africa, they don't put it out on the news much. The way that I monitor it is I monitor certain military websites because I'm very fascinated by this stuff. There's a whole bunch of Muslim wars actually going on in Africa. And but the one that I'm the most interested in is the one in Mozambique, which is the former Portuguese colony, which borders on us in our northeast. And the blacks, those blacks, as you might recall, I think they were only, Alex, a couple of hundred. The black Muslim army was like only a couple of hundred blacks. And in early 2021, they captured quite a town. It was a town with a couple of thousand people in it, maybe 12,000 people. So these black Muslims, they had captured villages and small places, and they were also doing ambushing people on roads, doing all kinds of terrorist activity, stealing stuff, shooting people, and so on. But when they captured this quite big town, that really drew the attention of everybody, and it even kind of went a little bit international, maybe. But then the South African government and others started looking at it. I'll tell you what is interesting, that the whole war is very fascinating because it shows me all kinds of dynamics that one wouldn't have expected. Like the government, the black communist government, it's the political party is called Frelimo, who've ruled that country since 1974, Alex, since I was a child. They've been ruling that place. That's when the Portuguese fled, and that they've ruled that place since then. So one party communist state, they've been in power since 1974. And even though they had this problem and they knew of this problem, and they had even sent some of their military to fight those terrorists, their military couldn't handle those few hundred. I mean, you're talking a nation of like a population of 13 or 15 million people, okay? A black nation of like 13, 15 million blacks cannot fight, does not have an army that is capable of fighting a couple of hundred black Muslims. And
interesting.
Yes. And but
again, who is organizing those black Muslims? Are they all black, or do they have some lighter skinned brains of the operation?
Alex, I think from what I could see in my previous researches, they are all black, but because they are Muslims, they are linked to the international Muslim world. So yeah, they do have links that go to the Middle East. So those Muslims, they may be Arab Muslims, but those Muslims are willing to support these black Muslims. You do probably find some kind of lighter skinned Muslims involved in driving or being the planners and organizers of some of these wars in other parts of Africa. But in this particular group in northern Mozambique, they are definitely 100% black. And so there is some method by which they get money, they get guns. Now, here's an interesting twist for you, Alex. is that we in South Africa, we got a lot of Muslims here. Not huge, but we've got probably close to about 2 million Muslims here. And the Muslims in South Africa are mostly Indian, not black, but they are mostly Indian along with some colored. Blacks being Muslims in South Africa is almost non-existent. If there are any black Muslims in South Africa, I certainly don't know about them.
Well, I'd be thinking like from some of your illegal invaders that you have from like Nigeria and stuff, you don't get any Muslim black Muslims that way, or
No.
no, I don't know if Nigeria is, they're pretty much split, aren't they?
Yes, Nigeria's got more black Christians than Muslims, and the Muslims are more like the terrorists, and so that they're operating illegally. The Muslims in Nigeria, I saw for the first time these black Muslims on motorbikes. They got like motorbike terrorists with motorbikes and AK-47s in Nigeria. And so these black countries have got a genuine terrorist problem, and their armies and air forces are not able to defeat those homegrown Muslims. They
Not
can't.
even 200 of them, they can't
Alex, it's
defeat.
amazing. It's amazing. So these ones in Mozambique now, and there's more twists to the Mozambique story, Alex. I later discovered that there could be corruption, black corruption, in the government where some of the Muslim stuff, some of these black Muslims might be involved in some kind of illegal activity that could involve drugs or something like that, and that government ministers in Frelimo are in cahoots or tucked into or linked into the illicit drug trade that the black Muslims are also running. So it's like they don't want to kill them because some of them are making money out of the black Muslims. So there's all kinds of weird crap going on there as to, because you see, if this was just a genuine military threat, the government of Mozambique can call on two big structures in Africa to come and help fight. First of all, Southern Africa, like South Africa, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Angola, those countries. Southern Africa has got a organization. There's like a government organization. It's called the SADC. So Southern Africa's got like its own governmental sort of miniature UN, you could call it, where they get together and they talk about common problems, including military problems, and the Southern Africans could help the Mozambicans anytime. So the Mozambicans could have called on the SADC, which would include South Africa, Zimbabwe, Angola, all of which have got armies who can come and help them immediately. The Mozambicans can also call on the African Union. I mean, Africa's like more than 50 countries, okay? So the whole of the African Union could be called in to come and help. But the blacks in charge of Mozambique actually kept quiet about this Muslim problem. And they only did very minor things. They used their army, and their army ran away from the Muslims. Then they went and got some whites. It was a white guy, not a particularly good white guy, but he's a white guy. He used to be from Rhodesia, right? He used to be from Rhodesia, but he stuck around in the time of Zimbabwe. His name is Van Dyke or something. And this Van Dyke guy worked for the Zimbabwe army, but he's a white guy. And then he developed political contacts with the blacks. And it seems now, decades later, Van Dyke runs a company that does anti-poaching. So he goes and he fights poachers and catches poachers for governments, okay, because it's blacks who are poaching, okay? And it seems that when he was doing this anti-poaching, and it included helicopters, that at a point he struck a deal with the Mozambican government to also go and fight the black Muslims. So I'm still talking about last year. So anyway, so this Van Dyke guy fought this Van Dyke guy with a bunch of South Africans, white South Africans, and a bunch of blacks. In total, it was about 30 guys. I'm not joking with you. It's like 30 guys, 20 of them are white, 10 of them are black. The owner of the company is a white guy. They struck a deal with the Mozambican government. Now they're busy fighting. They're fighting the Muslims using helicopters and AK-47s. And mm-hmm. I saw even machine guns. So they were fighting. They were the ones who were actually keeping the Muslims under control until about March, April of 2021. Then when the blacks captured that little town, then there was a lot of unhappiness that came from the blacks, where the blacks were saying that the whites and the helicopters are shooting too many blacks, and they think there's some racism there, blah, 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 blah. So the government then basically fired the whites, and the whites also happily left rather than get involved in legal wrangles. So the whites then left. So now Mozambique's on its own. And that's when South Africa and others started looking at coming in to helping Mozambique. Because, and do you know, Alex, the French have come to Mozambique. The French have come and trained troops, the army of Mozambique. Your country, the Americans, America was also there. American soldiers were also there. They were also offering to train, offering to help, etc. Europeans have actually been offering to help blacks out in many parts of Africa where these Muslim things are going on. We'll talk about that shortly. But anyway, the bottom line is that it was as a result of the capture of that village, of that town. That it's a town of about 12,000 people, I think, 12 or 20,000 people. It was as a result of that town that suddenly it got into all the news media. People were fleeing. People got killed. There were even one or two whites who were traveling in Mozambique who ended up getting killed. So then in June last year, the South African army was now officially given a mission to go there. And they eventually, it took them months. But eventually, after months, they sent 1,500 troops there. Another black country that offered to help that's got much more combat experience is Rwanda. Rwanda's up there in the Congo. Rwanda was mm-hmm. keen to go and help the Mozambicans. They sent about 1,000 blacks who were quite good troops. They got stuck into the Muslims. But one thing that I noticed, so between these three African countries, I'm guessing that you've got at least about 3,500 black troops, including South African special forces, mm-hmm. for what they're worth. Okay, so you've got at least 3,500. It may be more, because I don't know how many from the Mozambican government are in there, right? So you've got at least 3,500, maybe a few thousand more, and they are now trying to fight this small group of a couple of hundred black Muslims. Well, they said last week that they'd killed some Muslims, but they never tell you how many. They say, oh, we fought and we killed a bunch of people, but they never tell you how many, and they never tell you exactly when. So you don't really know the statistics. They haven't admitted to any more deaths of South Africans. One South African Special Forces soldier was shot in December or whatever. We don't know how many Rwandans have died in the fighting. We don't know how many Mozambican army have died in the fighting. We don't know what the total number is of Muslims that they've killed since last year. So everything's very, very hush-hush. And just here and there, they'll give little hints. And the one thing that comes out to me is that the Muslims have been quite aggressive and they have been attacking more. They were saying that I think in recent months, the black Muslims have launched 20 different attacks. The black Muslims are not afraid to attack the South African army or to attack any of the others. They are laying ambushes and they seem to be ambushes being an ambush on a road. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. So an ambush on a road is where they kind of lie in wait on the side of the road and you drive down the road and then they machine gun you and shoot you. So anyway, as far as I can see, and I had recalled that there doesn't seem to be a shortage of recruits for the black Muslims. So it's coming on 10 months, almost it's coming on 10 months since that attack. And since they were originally driven out of that town, and still they seem to be quite on the go and they've got quite a chunk of territory that they still seem to be the boss of. And I don't know I don't know how much their army, whether their little army is increasing in size, but doesn't look like they're being crushed totally yet, not at all. And the South Africans are now saying that they're short of equipment. They sent in two big military helicopters. But the military helicopters they're sending in, I'm not sure if they do have some machine guns on them. They might have like one machine gun, but they're saying they need more machine guns. They need more stuff, but it doesn't look like they're going very far. It's a very lackadaisical thing. I think it looks to me like the Muslims are going to be around. So I'm pleased with that. Okay. It's going to be exciting. I'll keep following it.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Anything else going on over there?
I think the only other thing is I saw that there was a black country. France has been trying desperately to try to maintain – See, when the French gave up their colonies, the French still kind of had a finger in the pie. And what the French did was, even though they handed over their countries to the blacks, they said to the blacks that, that they would constantly come and try and help them in all kinds of ways, including military. And so the French have actually been fighting the most. They are the European power that's fought the most against black Muslims in Africa. And the French have even been begging the United States to help. And America is not very keen on this. And the French were in Mali, and which is some other nondescript freaking black country further north. And then Denmark also sent some troops to Mali. They were trying to help the blacks in Mali. Then a Frenchman said something insulting about the blacks, or implied insult or something. So the blacks then told the French and the Danes to fuck off. So the blacks are getting free fucking help from other European countries. Mm-hmm. Then they get pissed off and arrogant. And then they tell them to fuck off. So diversity isn't working, but the blacks are cutting off their noses to spite their faces. What I love the way all of this diversity and liberalism is failing. It's failing.
Well, what's the specific problem in Mali?
To be honest with you, I actually don't know. I'm not sure if there was a coup, maybe.
I know there was a coup in one of them. I can't remember which one it was. It might have been. Let me check it out.
But I think the purpose was Muslims. I think the reason the Europeans came was Muslims. And that was that I think was the reason why they were there. And then the blacks told them to bugger off. So these blacks are quite arrogant, and they even if they tell the French and the Danes to fuck off, the fact of the matter is the blacks still have the problem that they had. How are they going to solve their problem now? And I love it. I love it. It's this Muslim thing is very, very interesting. Alex, this thing could become a big thing.
So there's quite a bit of Muslim activity where you think of Northern Africa north of Sahara, but now there's a bunch of them in the middle of the country below, south of the Sahara.
Yes.
And in various countries, they're the bleeding edge of the neocons, what I say, the bloody edge of Islam, fighting to kill people and turn these into Muslim countries.
Yes.
What's going on here?
Yes, and even these Muslims in Mozambique, they have said that they want to create a Muslim state in the north of Mozambique. So the biggest Muslim activity is in Nigeria, in the north of Nigeria. There's a bunch of different Muslim groups, it seems. And Alex, it's very interesting because 10 years ago, 5 or 10 years ago, white mercenaries, proper professionals, white mercenaries from South Africa went and fought in Nigeria for quite a long time. And they were killing lots of those black Muslims. And I was understanding that they'd won the war. But it doesn't seem like the wars are properly won. And so what is wonderful about all these wars is that they are never properly able to defeat the black Muslims properly. And so the black Muslims seem to be gaining more and more footholds in places. So the black Muslim problem, if you look at a map of Africa, the black Muslim problem is mostly from about the eastern tip of Africa, that sort of tip that looks like a nose. It's from sort of the eastern tip from Somalia through to Nigeria. In it sort of covers that area. But I've also heard that there might be a small Muslim terrorist unit, terrorist organization in the center of Africa, in the Congo itself. So these Muslim terrorists are slowly looking like they're expanding further south and finding new footholds. Now, let me tell you about the South African Muslims. The South African Muslims are mostly not black, but they're obviously Muslims, and there are hardcore pro-militant Muslims here in South Africa. And they are mostly Indians. They've got good income. They have got money. And it is possible that the South African Muslims might even secretly be helping the black Muslims in Mozambique. And it is even theoretically possible, given 20 or 30 years, that the Muslim problem in Mozambique might get help from the Muslims in South Africa, that maybe in 30 years' time, South Africa might have a Muslim problem. So it's very, very exciting that because then these Muslims in South Africa might be secretly assisting these blacks who want to overthrow black rule and create Muslim states. So, I mean, this could present all kinds of nightmares for the blacks in the future. I'm not worried about the Muslims. The Muslims couldn't take the whites. The Muslims, even if the Muslims wanted to conquer us, just like if the blacks wanted to conquer us, Muslims wouldn't get very far. If the whites really wanted to smack them, if the whites really got up off their asses, they could do it. So, but it's very interesting. And I mean, as I've told you, those few guys with helicopters, they were shooting Muslims. They were killing the most black Muslims that I could hear of. And, so I think it's very interesting how useless the black armies are. and the black armies and the black states and their inability to deal with this, these problems unquestionably are going to get worse. And I love it. I love it. It adds yet another twist into these states that are themselves getting worse and worse. I love this. Anything that breaks the system, I love. And I think there's going to be weird stuff. When I look at and when I look at the black at Black Africa, Alex, I was chatting to a Zimbabwean again the other day for the first time in a long time, and I was finding out about what the blacks are doing in Zimbabwe because they are still trying to overthrow their communists there. Alex, Africa is going to fall apart. This century is going to be a century of more and more mayhem in Africa. People who think that Africa's problems have been solved and you've seen the last of violence in Africa, no, war is coming to Africa, more war than ever before. I reckon, Alex, by you and I will be dead, but after you and I are dead, there's going to be wars raging all across Africa. And I think those wars will even ultimately draw in nations from elsewhere. And I see so much possible opportunities for whites. If whites will just stand their ground, I think there's wonderful stuff that can be done. As I watched the continent breaking down, and the blacks are breaking down, Alex. Their politics is breaking down. South Africa, there's all kinds of constant churning going on as well. Black politics is breaking down, and eventually these people are going to fight each other. It's coming. And then if you've still got things like Islam and Indians, oh God, it's going to get very exciting. That's pretty much, I think that's pretty much it. Let's see if there's any other quick news here. The only other thing is price increases in South Africa. They've started warning that we're going to see a lot of price increases. And already the one thing that has freaked people out is petrol. Our petrol prices have hit new highs we've never seen before. And the electricity company Eskom wants 20% increases on the prices, but they ask for 20% every year, but they don't always get it. But it looks like it might even be 12% or something this year. So even as they get more dysfunctional and they can't run things, they want more money. Africa's crazy. That's why the whole thing's going to fucking break. It's just levels of breaking. That's all. I think that's Africa summed up.
Okay. Well,
how is America?
We had a snowstorm move through the middle. Let's see what's going on. They continue to mess with those three and the sentencing and trying to get them on hate crimes. The three that shot that nigger criminal Ahmaud Arbery down in Georgia. That's a minor thing, though. That's not important. The big thing in the Americas is the trucker boycott up in Canada. A whole bunch of truckers went and surrounded the Capitol, and I'm hoping they're going to burn it down. But I don't know. Justin Trudeau fled, and they're very angry about all these mandates for vaccines, even as the Omicron burns out, and basically all these governments are coming around to admitting that the whole thing was a scam and didn't work, and it's just kind of moving on to something else. I hope that's about to start happening. Not many people are wearing masks anymore here. Let's see. What else in America? Not all that much, just sort of the middle of winter and kind of doldrummy.
I have a couple of questions for you. That Canadian trucker thing is awesome. I was following that, and I see that the peak of it's going to be this weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing what's happening. I have seen stuff going around where some people are saying that there might be bombs and stuff like that. But I also wonder whether some people are not trying to scare other people.
They bring out all their defamatory language. You go, oh, you're Nazis, you're racist, you're blah, blah, blah. Apparently there's a huge amount of Indians, like dothead Indians in trucking in Canada. I don't know, but they got Freedom Convoy as a rally against the vaccine requirement for cross-border truckers. So these, they're already having supply chain problems, and then they start having stupid mandates like this. It's just, you know, as usual, the government does whatever strengthens the government, and they like bossing people around. None of it's rational. So hundreds of truckers have driven their giant rigs into the Canadian capital, Ottawa, to protest against Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's COVID-19 vaccine mandates required to cross the United States border. So he screws with their industry. They show up and make a giant ring. They've been honking and driving the leftists in the cities nuts. So it's kind of funny.
Excellent. That's excellent. Well, I saw that apparently it's going to be 67,000 truckers.
I mean, it's enough that it had enough popular views on YouTube that they pulled it down. And, I want it all to stop. These measures are unjustified, said one protester, 31-year-old businessman Philip Castangue, outside the parliament building. So, yeah, they've even been thinking about doing it in the U.S. at the Super Bowl, which is our big sporting event of the year, which is next weekend. Not this coming weekend, but one more week, 10 days from now or whatever it is, 8 days or 9 days. They're thinking about doing it in the U.S. I don't know if they will or not, but yeah, what they've done in Canada is great, and it's already led to some dropping of restrictions. I think Trudeau's trying to resist. He won't talk to them, calling them Nazis, et cetera. But, and, you know, they've tried to do everything they could to misrepresent it and deny people the information about what's going on. And this is what you're reduced to, where you have Jews controlling the media and Jews controlling the government, and they're both working together on an anti-white and, frankly, just plain anti-human agenda. So we'll see what all comes of it. It's had some good effects so far. Maybe that's the main thing going on in the Americas right now. Other than that, they're trying to rig up another war between Ukraine and Russia, and talking big. We got this Jewish jerk named Newland or Noodleman originally, who is one of the top neocons, and they're absolutely trying to instigate war with Russia over Ukraine, which I assure you not one in 100 Americans could spot on a map. I guarantee that. So the neocons, the Jews, take over the U.S. government and try to start a war with the nuclear power, Russia, which objects merely to us sticking missiles right around its border like we're doing, you know, expanding NATO to every country on its border and then equipping them with weapons. They don't want that. So they have very simple, rational security concerns. But of course, Jews are always right and everybody else is always the aggressor. And they try to excite the usual patriotic bluster to stand up to it. But I really don't think anybody's listening to that at this point. America has so many problems that no one really gives a damn other than these stupid Jews in the State Department about who is in control in Ukraine. But those are the two main things going on right now as of this Team White.
Yeah, Alex, that Ukraine thing, I was also looking at it. The whole thing is totally manufactured. It's total junk. I personally can't see anybody's going to fight anyone.
Yeah, no, I mean, they don't like Putin because he prevented their deposing and destroying Assad and affecting regime change in Syria and Lebanon or Syria. And so they're trying to get him back. But more broadly, the U.S. is going bankrupt. We just passed $30 trillion in debt. And that's, rest assured, that's a generous estimate. And so all they can do is print money. Now they keep, maybe we talk a little about Bitcoin and stuff, but Bitcoin is on a dip. But the Fed has not stopped printing money. What they've done is threatened to raise interest rates, which is the natural way that the market would go if you had a free market in money, because there would be a price for renting money if you need it. But the Fed has deliberately kept it at zero. And people like Max Kaiser say, yeah, they'll always say that, but they'll never actually raise the rate. So they'll keep making money free and easy, and prices will keep going up. Like you mentioned, in South Africa, there's a lot of inflation in the U.S. The more serious people say it's at least 15%, and it's pretty visible in a lot of things. So even though Bitcoin is down, it's not, and the feds are talking some of the right stuff, they're not doing it, the Federal Reserve. And so, I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, yeah, the
you
Ukraine.
Were saying $30 trillion in debt.
Yeah, 30. They just hit that mark like 2 days ago, I think it was, where we're officially wow. $30 trillion in debt. So they can't. Everything the government does is basically a scam. See, they have to pretend that inflation is only like as low as they can possibly make it. So everybody says they don't count the numbers correctly on true inflation, because if they did, they have what are called cost of living adjustments. That would mean they'd have to pay all the people they owe money to, their employees and retired people and such. They'd have to raise the amount they're paying them. So they deliberately undercalculate inflation, which again, they cause through their Federal Reserve, which is a government chartered body. The white ignoramuses always point out that it's private, but it doesn't matter that it's private. It's chartered by the U.S. government. They can cancel it anytime they want. Right.
But they don't.
No, they don't. They no. And
they
that's,
won't.
That's the functional way that Jews control the world, is through controlling the money. So the one way out of all this mess, well, you could wait for it all to fall apart, or you can actively get with some kind of new money, which would be Bitcoin, that threatens to disrupt it by being absolutely hard. That is, there's only 21 million that can ever exist. And if that's true, and I don't know for a fact that it's true, but it's claimed, then that is the way that ultimately the world will probably go, because it supports the interest of the 99% instead of the criminal elite 1% that has been getting richer all the way through this money printing and this fake pandemic called COVID. So that's what I'm hoping for. But, you know, I can tell I'm not going to give any advice, because I don't know which way the market is heading. And maybe we ought to discuss that a little.
Yes.
Bitcoin last year, I thought for sure it, everybody said, and this is an example about, you always want to be contrarian. And the minute you're not contrarian, you're going to get burned. They're all said the last 3 months of 2021 were supposed to be the peak of the four-year cycle. And the lowest of the smart boys said Bitcoin would be at least 100 to 135,000. And in fact, Bitcoin went down during those months and is now resting in the 35 to 39 range. So I think it's still a good buy, but I think that for fundamental reasons. Fundamental means the technology. It has nothing to do with market trends or price going up and down, but the basics of the technology is why I believe in it. And I think at any price, it's pretty much worth it in the long run, but that doesn't mean it hasn't gone down. When I thought it would go up, it did. It did the opposite of what I thought would happen and what most of these, to all of these people, said would happen. And they were saying anything from 220,000. Max Kaiser said, Plan B said 135,000 as his floor for the end of December. I missed that by a mile. And the other ones were in the various hundreds of thousands. But in fact, I predicted 76,000. In fact, I don't know where it ended, but it was somewhere around like 50,000. So everybody yes. way off. And from there, it's declined further. So what do you think? Do you have any opinion about where the Bitcoin price is headed?
Yes, Alex, most definitely. I last year was the first year that I really started looking at Bitcoin and crypto prices seriously. And I've been following it ever since then. And I use some of the methods that I have from my past years when I fiddled with gold and other things. And Alex, I watched that prediction that Max Kaiser did with that Italian girl who runs that show. Oh,
Danielle Camboni,
yes,
or whatever her name is.
Yes, Danielle Camboni. That I watched that.
You know, he records stuff at least twice a week. He does interviews, and he says the same thing in most of them.
But what I did was I watched that thing at least twice. And I listened very carefully to what he explained, because he was also explaining how he arrives at these things. And he said, as you say, 220,000 for sure. But he said it would peak in October. And he said it would peak in October to January. And then he said that is the end of the cycle. So one of the things about Bitcoin and crypto, when I was looking at it, because we're dealing with a brand new phenomena. It's not existed before, so we don't have stock market.
About 13 years old. It basically started in January 2009, so we're starting the 13th year effectively of it.
Right. So these things haven't really developed proper cycles that you can analyze, et cetera, et cetera. But Max Keiser said that there's a 4-year cycle. And the 4-year cycle is not just an accident. It's I stand to be corrected, but my understanding is that
Well,
every 4 years they do a thing called the halving.
yes, that's what it springs from. The halving is every 4 years, and the last was in May 2020. So
Right.
the next one will be in 2024, and that is what the cycle is related to, at least in theory.
Right. So there is a mechanism that's completely different to gold, stock markets, etc. They don't have anything like that. So what does the halving do? The halving makes it much more difficult to mine Bitcoin. That's what the halving does. It makes the mining much more difficult, which
Well,
means
does it make it more difficult, or you just get half the reward? It's the same mining, but you get half the reward, I think.
well, whether it's half the reward or more difficult, the bottom line is that whatever mining you were doing, you're going to get less than what you had before. So
Yes.
what they're doing is it's like a tap that's open, and every 4 years they turn it more and more closed, and the rate of flow through that tap is slowing down. So
And give the biggest context. How many Bitcoin are there total?
I don't know what the current one is, but they say it
No,
can't
I'm
be.
saying how many are there total Bitcoin are there?
The grand totals that it can't exceed is 21 million. And I
Right.
think,
And how many are already mined?
Alex, I'm guessing that it's probably like very close to the end already.
I'm not sure. I think it's like
I'll
Eight,
check now.
I think there's only like 2 million or a little more that are left to be mined, and the last one will be mined in like 2140, like 120 years from now, I believe, if I'm correct. And
Okay, I've got the number. 18.77 million.
yeah, so what I said, so there's only 2.3, under 2.3 million left to be mined over the next 118 years, I believe, right? Plus, several million have been lost. So the functional, actual total number of Bitcoin will be more like 15, 16 million.
Okay.
So all these factors come together to produce increasing scarcity. Yeah, the supply inflates by a small percentage year as they mine new coins, but it's absolutely predictable the amount that are going to be mined, and they've already mined almost 19 out of 21 million. So there's going to be less and less. This should, in theory, drive the price up. As long as people value Bitcoin, the price can pretty much only go higher because there's not much left to mine, and stuff is lost all the time and already lost. And more people come to understand and join the network and understand why Bitcoin is valuable. And you've got all these Federal Reserve central banks around the world that are continually printing money. So the USA is $30 trillion in debt. Every possible, these are the fundamental factors that mean that Bitcoin should increase in value over time. But when you try to apply that from day to day, from month to month, or even within, I wouldn't even say a year, because it's pretty much gone up every year. But when you try to apply that day to day to the market, you can easily be wrong. So if you're going to get in, my advice is just, if you believe the fundamental case that I'm laying out here that we're talking about, then just buy it and don't worry about it. Or you can try to more time the market and think, well, it's down right now, so it's a good time to buy. But it could also go down farther. So, Jan, you have an opinion
Yes,
on where the market is headed in general
definitely.
terms.
Okay.
I'm not going to offer any opinions because I was wrong last year. I thought it was a very good time to buy when it was in the 50s, and that proved to be wrong. So I'm not going to, I don't, I think I have grounds for doubting that I know where it's headed in the near term of 1 year. So, but what do you think, Jan?
Okay. So one of my conclusions when I look at all cryptos follow Bitcoin, even though they're not exactly linked to Bitcoin. But when Bitcoin is popular, it makes other cryptos popular, even though those cryptos may move more than Bitcoin or less than Bitcoin. So it looks to me like thanks to Bitcoin, all cryptos go through this four-year cycle that Max Keiser was talking about. So when Max Keiser said 220, I was watching and I could see it ain't going to make it. It's not even going to make it. It's not even making 100. But he clearly described the end of the cycle. And though in your and my previous discussions earlier today, you've said that he's now changed his mind on that. But let me just continue with what I was looking.
Jan, let me clarify there. Max Keiser predicted a year-end price of 220,000 in 2021. Now, this year, he has simply said, well, I'm simply going to move that to the end of 2022. And he says that the price is related to the hash rate, which is the difficulty of mining Bitcoin. And that was hurt by the Chinese kicking out all the miners. It took a while to recover. So that's, to the extent he's offered an explanation, that's what he says. But he's very much fundamentals driven and says it's going to get to 220,000 at some point. To me, it's clear that no one really knows exactly when it's going to happen. Now, I don't know that he's ever doubted the four-year cycle. He's not a big cycle guy. So the way it is most people think there's a four-year cycle. Some people think it's expanding into a super cycle where the cycle will take longer than 4 years to play out. That is maybe 5 or even 6 years to play out. I don't know. Different people have different ideas. And Willy Woo, it's just going to go in a staggering upward to the right walk over time rather than being as predictable of a four-year cycle as it has been for the first three. As we said, it's been around, this is like the 13th year. So, okay. You know, is the 4 year, we don't, like you said, we don't have enough data to know exactly if it's going to keep repeating what it has been. But so all my point here is all last year, all the people who were allowed to talk about this on YouTube, who are smart guys who mostly got in 2017, already made millions from it. They all thought it was going to be six figures by the end. Most of them still believe in the four-year cycle. And most of them kept insisting, even as it went down those last 3 months, that we're still in a bear cycle. And I've stopped watching them now. I've got the idea what's going on. I don't need any more of their help analyzing it. So you can dispute whether we're in a bear or bull cycle now, but in any case, the next objective thing will be the halving again in 2024, some months into 2024. And that should be before, in anticipation of, or after, because of, there should be a rise in price at some point. But in the near term, I don't know. Now you make the case that we're in a bear cycle and it's going to continue from here and it'll drop further. And I'll add something a little ways in.
Okay. Well, obviously, that halving is a critical factor in this. And it's very interesting what you mentioned about the effect on the mining of the Chinese crackdown. That makes good sense. Okay. So anyway, I still think when I look, at least when I look at the charts, so regardless of what our theories are, the halving will definitely come back and play a role in 2024. And the next thing is that I'm going to post this chart that I showed you. I'm going to put it in the video so people can see it, so that they can see this chart that I'm talking about. This is called a point and figure chart, and this is my old, this is my favorite. It's a very old technique that Americans traders used to use a century ago. In the 20s, and I love it. To me, it still tells a lot of the best information that I've ever seen. Anyway, looking at this thing, when I look at this is a Bitcoin ETF, and so what I see from this thing is there's that big red line, and that big red line means that we are now in a bear market. In other words, the price is going down. You can see that it did have a bullish angle, but the bullish angle came to an end. And at the moment, we're on our way down. So when I look at this thing, I am quite convinced from my own, this is my personal viewpoint, I'm convinced that we're already in the bear market. And the bear market's here, and I can't see that this bear market's just going to go away. The prices have been crashing like crazy since about the middle of November. So the crash started in November, and from November until now, it started at about 68,000, 69,000. We're now down to 36,000, And I don't see any reason to believe that the crash is over. And when I look at this, my best guess, this is the best guess just based on just thumbsuck, because the fact of the matter is when a market crashes, when a market truly crashes, it doesn't just crash 10% or 20% or 30%. It loses more than half its value. When a market really crashes, it's going to lose 60, 70% of its value. So when I look at this thing, this looks to me like a full-on crash, and I don't see any reason to believe that this market is going to recover anytime soon. And I wouldn't be surprised if this thing continues down, perhaps as low as 10,000.
Interesting.
Where it loses maybe, where it loses like 90% of its value.
All right, Jan, let me say one of the few analysts I followed last year who was reliably a contrarian pointed out that in every peak, now again, Bitcoin had gone up to 69.2, I think was its peak. And when it came down, all the other analysts keep saying, oh no, it's still in a bull market. It's still going to go up to a second higher peak. But instead, it's just gone down for probably about 5 months now, I think. And this fellow made the point that in all these previous cycles, the average drop from the peak was 82%, which would put it at roughly 14,000 in that range. So beware, even though it does seem like a very good time to buy when it's in the 30s, it could very well do what Jan is saying and go down, even down to 10,000 or 14,000 or 17,000 or something. It doesn't seem like it because all you hear is hype from the people like Kaiser. But the fact is it can go down as much as up, and it may go down hugely. Average dip again from the peak, 82%. Think about that. That's an incredible buying opportunity. So if you wait until it gets down there, if it goes down there. Now, again, it could turn around and go right back up to 60. I don't know. I'm not even going to guess because I literally don't know. It's not like I have an opinion and I'm not sharing it. I literally don't even have a true opinion of what's going to happen other than in the longer period of, say, let's say at this point, a couple years, it will go up, I believe. But, you know, it could very easily stay down for another 6 months or a year or even 2 years. So...
Well, Alex, when I look at this, because I used to follow all kinds of other stock markets, and I've been burned myself. I myself have invested in things at the top, then got burned, then the thing lost 60, 70% of its value, and I was crying, crying all the way down. So if there's one thing I can talk about from personal experience, it is when a market has hit its top. And when it's hit its top, most of the people who are in on the market don't want to psychologically accept it. It's like a shock. And they kind of cling to it. But if the market is, let me use the term broken, if that upward cycle is broken, then it's just a downhill. It's just a whole slow crying effort. And you'll see from time to time, people say, oh, it's going to turn around, going to turn around. It doesn't turn around. The market is bust. When I look at this chart, I say this market is broken. It's already, I mean, even right now, let's do a quick calculation here. If you look at
Jan,
36.
What Team White wants, they want to hear, if you care to, can't force you to do it, you give a falsifiable prediction of what you think is going to happen so that we can look back, say, 11 months from now at the end of the year and see whether you were right or wrong. If you want to say that. I don't, because I literally don't have an opinion on it at this point.
I'll open my big mouth and give my personal opinion. Okay. So at this point, Bitcoin has already lost 50% of its value. So for me, when I look at this, I don't see any reason to believe that this thing is gonna turn around now. I think this thing is well into a bear market. I think the market is broken. I think that we need to wait for 10,000 to 15,000. and we look for 10,000 to 15,000, and maybe that's going to be 6 months from now or later in the year, but it's still quite a way away. So there's my prediction. And
okay,
I don't see that it can. I don't think people need to be too quick to dive in. All markets, once a market cycle is broken, it goes down, and it will go down, and it gets very boring, and people become very despondent, et cetera, et cetera. So it could easily go down, and people might even declare that it's the end of Bitcoin and everything, and everyone's feeling bad about it. And then we will keep monitoring this chart, and we will watch this thing, because at a point, this thing will bottom out. And I now monitor Bitcoin very closely all the time. At least once a week, I look at it. So we can
and we on Team White will be here to tell you when we think it's bottomed out. Now, I don't know. You might be right. I mean, I personally, I look at it and I see that VeChain is another one I like, is at 5 cents. I personally did not think it was going to go below 10 cents again. And I figure, like, boy, that looks darn good to buy that at 5 cents. But once you get a few times, once you bought things, say 12, 15 times, and you look back and you go, every single time I could have bought it for less if I had waited, then you see it at 5 cents, which seems like an extraordinary value. And you go, well, if I were to buy that today at 5 cents, why the hell does it not go to 3 cents in another week and then 1 cent after that? So it's a real, real tricky thing.
Well, I mean, my conclusion. Alex, if you look at 2018, when it peaked back then, I think it was 2018, and then it collapsed again. You'll see that it collapsed a huge amount. So I don't think an 80 or 90% collapse, I don't think it's an unrealistic thing.
Not only is it not unrealistic, it's historically precedented completely. As the guy said, the average drop on all these times was 82%. So that means it's as likely to go down 90% as 70%.
Yeah, so I would say hang in there. We watch the market. All markets will turn around. This market will turn around too, and this market will go up again. And I do like that information about China and the Bitcoin mining. I wondered whether that had
That. they kicked out the miners to Kazakhstan. They went to Kazakhstan, Texas, and maybe other places, but that. Kaiser always says the price is related to the hash rate, and the hash rate dropped when they kicked them out, and now it's finally re-risen to where it was before, so the price should start going up, but yet, you know, the price is still in the 30s. It could be it just goes down more to like 25 and then rebounds. I don't know exactly. It's hard to say. It could only drop 70, or it could drop 90 down to 10,000. We will see. Or it could be at the bottom now, I suppose. It's very hard to tell. So I will say, if you bought in high, I would advise you just to wait, and eventually it will get back and keep rising, because the fundamental case for it, which I laid out a few minutes ago, is still there. Or you can hear it from Kaiser or any of these other people. The basic case for it makes a great deal of sense. Some of the smartest people in the world agree that it's correct. That doesn't mean they're correct, but it's pretty darn likely eventually it's going to get back where we want to see it, which is six figures and rising to seven figures. And I do believe that. But Alex, as I've always said, that's over 10 years. You know, who knows?
Yeah, I think
I said judge what I said at 10 years is what I said. So know that. I'm not going to venture any prediction until I have a real strong sense. And I have no idea if it's going to do what we're saying now or just bottom out 32,000 or something, or 35, and then start rising. I don't know. It could do anything is the key. It's not guaranteed. These people all sound so sure. And maybe it's not true that technical analysis, which is chart reading, is astrology for men, as Kaiser calls it. But, you know, it sure as hell ain't a science either. Okay, maybe it is if you're trading if you're trading inside of a day or a period. It's probably more easier to pick up on that mathematically. But over the longer haul, I mean, it's not all that easy to – yeah, the chart will tell you what happened, but that's not the same as telling you what's going to happen, as far as I can tell.
Well, Alex, let's monitor it in the various shows as the months go by. We'll look at the charts again, and
Yes, absolutely.
we'll see what happens. But
Don, I just
that's
want to
my
say,
suggestion.
yeah, we will certainly do that. I'm still strong based on the fundamental case, that is the technology involved, and all this is basically more or less software or coding. I still support Bitcoin, Cardano, VeChain, and Vitho, which is related to VeChain, as much as I ever did. So understand that.
And I still think, Alex, just like you said originally, where you said you are looking for things where you think that, you know, something that could help whites that can go up like 10 times, 20
yeah.
times. I still think that if we can catch this at the bottom of this market, that it will still have its day, because you can see even with just last year, if you look at last year and the year before, you will have seen that some of those very same things that you were talking about went up more than 10 times in a year, in 1 year. So,
yeah.
So you know, even if the markets get more mature and more sluggish, I still reckon you can get big returns. And all we need to do is just catch it more or less at the bottom. And then from there onwards, you just sit back and this baby will fly.
All right, Jan. Well, I want to see. Well, next month when it's at 46,000, what will you say then?
Oh, yeah.
That's the question.
Don't,
well, we'll see. You might be right. I don't know. I really don't know.
Next month we talk and we'll carry on this conversation.
Well, you know, when it's towards the start of last year, it was in the 50,000s, and I thought it was a good buying opportunity. And it did eventually go up to 69.2, but then it went down during the middle of the year. Then it came back up, and I thought it was back in the 50s range. And again, I thought it was a good buying opportunity because I thought, okay, it didn't the first time, but it's probably going to bust forward into 70,000, 80,000. So I predicted 76 at the end of the year, and again, by God, it dived back down. So this stuff can take a lot longer than it seems.
Well, it is an exciting market. And now that we've seen trillions of dollars move into it, I think people take this market seriously.
Well, yeah, I guess for people listening to us, don't get into it and if you're going to shit yourself when it drops and sell off when it's low, don't do that. Okay. If you can't afford to put it in there and leave it and give it a good years long test, then you don't have enough money to be messing with this stuff. Okay.
That's probably, if I may add to that, when you play with stuff like this, play with money that you can lose. Say to yourself, what would happen if I never get this money back, am I going to be all right? If you can play with money that you can lose, then that's fine. Then you know, don't go sell your house, your car, and then get into this. You're new to it, and there's lots of unknowns. But the good news...
Yeah. Well, see, you had Plan B saying Bitcoin has never departed. He's got his stock to flow model. Bitcoin has never departed from this range in the 10 years of its existence. Well, now, if you sold your house and put it on that, betting on that, that he was right, that 135,000 would be the low case and like 288 would be the high for the end of December 2021, the end of the year. If you had done that, you would have been fucked and wrecked by it. So, the fact that something hasn't happened or some guy's making a bunch of claims doesn't mean a damn thing. The market can go wherever the hell it wants to go. There's nothing binding it from dropping or rising at all. So these people all sound super sure. They appear to have made a bunch of money, but it doesn't really mean anything particularly. You got to try to understand what Bitcoin is on the fundamental level, which we've tried to explain to you, and why it's valuable. And if it is valuable, then it's going to be almost infinitely valuable because – like Kaiser, again, to give him credit, you know, just as the Fed can print infinite amounts of money, that flipped over is how valuable Bitcoin can potentially be because it can't be printed. So it's absolutely hard. Whereas they're going to have to keep printing dollars. He always says you can't taper a Ponzi scheme. they'll talk like they're going to raise rates and make money harder, which would affect Bitcoin negatively, but they can't do it because they have to keep paying their bills. They have to keep printing money. So in the long enough term, that is going to tell and result in a rise in the price of Bitcoin and any other solid cryptocurrency. Some people believe Bitcoin is the only one worth investing in. I don't believe that, but some serious people do believe that. So you got to do some of the thinking yourself, but study Bitcoin and what it is, understand the fundamentals, know how to essentially acquire it, set up a wallet, and download it to cold storage. That's the minimum to do if you're part of Team White to protect yourself long-term from predatory Jews operating the printing presses inside the private Federal Reserve, by which they feed themselves and support wars, you know, against whites in Ukraine and Russia, et cetera. So this is about protecting yourself and your kids and your grandchildren and having a future and thinking like a man who's part of a race that has a long-term future that extends infinitely into the future. This is part of your responsibility in taking care of those people because they aren't going to have the opportunity to buy into Bitcoin. You know, hundreds of years from now, they'll be able to buy a little tiny bit of one maybe. But what you do now could have a very real influence on the outcome of the racial struggle that we're in. I don't think that's dramatic at all. I think that's accurate.
Alex, there's something at your end that's like it's scratching. And I can.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. That's my cord. I've got a headset on. I was holding it.
Okay, sorry, thanks. No problem. Well, Alex, I think given how fast and sharp these moves have been, I think it's waiting 4 years is not long. And if people are a little bit patient and you get into a thing slowly and work with money that you can lose and we play this, let's see what happens. I don't think we've seen the end of it yet. And I saw a video, there was a video on YouTube where somebody was saying that Bitcoin is the most disruptive technology they've seen in a decade. So I think that, and disruptive technology is normally, you know, new stuff that totally turns things on its head. So I think that's a good sign. That was quite a good compliment.
Yeah, I think potentially since the printing press, because it the technology that can be put on top of it on the second or third layer, you can essentially, like the stuff Cardano is doing, you can essentially drive graft out of whatever you want to apply it to. And that's coincidentally kind of proved paradoxically by the U.S. government not being all anxious to hey, we want to use this blockchain technology to guarantee the security and the results of our democratic elections. You notice how none of them say that because they don't want honest technology. And see, that's what this affords is essentially honest functioning, where that's what the word trustless means. You don't have to trust, like when you use whatever the software is they use to count votes, you have to trust these lying Jews when they say, oh, no, that voting machine can't be hooked up to the internet, hence alterable from abroad. You know, oh, no, we're sending the results over to Germany where we'll have our specialist tabulate and send you the results. Well, with blockchain and stuff, you don't have to trust that. So all this stuff, starting with money, but certainly not ending with money, can really drive out graft out of everything. Just as like with VeChain, you can absolutely know where every individual article that you're tracking at each step along the production and supply chain. So you don't have to rely on, oh, these guys are selling something that turns out to be horse, or they're selling tuna that they're claiming is, you know, something else. You can verify whatever you want to verify, you can verify it using this trustless guaranteed technology. So this stuff can really threaten to kind of remake government and even just sort of human interaction economically in a way we've never seen before. That will be on the level of the printing press and printing books, because it won't allow it. It'll basically drive graft and corruption out of the process wherever it's employed. The downside to it is it can also guarantee totalitarian microscopic control if you allow it. I mean, they can put in that you have to have a vaccine and all your data on one card and put a chip under your skin and all the rest of the stuff they've always freaked out about. That is also possible with it, but overall the upside is tremendous. And it's going to happen one way or the other, or both ways at the same time, most likely. So Alex, I'd say study up on it and get some if you haven't with Bitcoin. But it's not a bad buying price right now. But like Jan is saying, I tend to agree. It probably is going to go down somewhat more. How much more, I don't know, but somewhat more.
Well, Alex, what I will say is I spent a bit of time last year also looking into things like Ethereum. And I didn't realize that the coin itself is almost like a computer program, and that there is computer logic linked to the coin. So people don't understand that that you're not just looking at a coin. It's more than a coin. It's software. It's software, yes. And so that thing, Bitcoin, simply is a piece of software that works in one way, but you cannot in any way equate them. In fact, they are becoming stranger and more different in so many ways that you can hardly conceive of. And I think you're right. I think your comparison to the printing press is the way, is that this is the beginning of something enormous that will never go away. It will be here until the end of civilization.
There's no doubt about that. And these are all individual animals. They're not just like different forms of fiat are the same thing with different pictures on the cover. But these are different technologies, each of the individual coins.
Yes.
So that analogy doesn't really overly work, except we're using them as money. But the base layer, the most diverse and secure. And even today we had a decentralized finance is one. See, there's a base layer of Bitcoin, or some of the others are base layer. That's the money. And then on top of that, you can put on other rails or services. And this is all ultimately just software technology. But Bitcoin only has 21 million. Like Ethereum, they can print as many as they want. Now, Cardano and VeChain are also limited. Cardano has like 45 billion. Hard limit, and VeChain has, I think, 76 billion. But Ethereum, I don't believe, has a hard cap on it. So that's why I've always been against Ethereum, because they can print more, and it's not particularly great technology, I don't think. It's the market leader right now at the level that it's at. But I believe ultimately Cardano or others will replace it. Well, today, one of the big applications of this stuff to drive out banks is decentralized finance. But this is the technology for this is not perfected. And one of these companies that was providing this service was hacked for $300+ million worth of problems, something like that. Cardano was not hacked, but Ethereum and a number of others. It was something that was bridging from Ethereum when you're trying to shift in and out of from Ethereum to others. And Ethereum, Solana, and some of these other ones I don't like was hacked. So you have to be real careful with some of them. This is more advanced applications that sit on top of the base layer of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is basically just money or gold right now, the store of value. And it's being used in some places like Nigeria and El Salvador, where they're really trying to be cutting edge to actually buy things. But eventually, when the whole system has Bitcoin underlaying it, then I suppose at that point it would make sense to start spending Bitcoin instead of hoarding it, waiting for it to go up in price. But we have to transition to that, and it's going to take several years. Last year we saw El Salvador is the first nation to accept Bitcoin as legal tender, and they're thinking more nations will come along. We saw Michael Saylor, of MicroStrategies basically buying as many Bitcoin as he can, because in his view, it's the hardest, best asset. And he has over 120,000 Bitcoin. And overall, his have gone up in value. But more and more people are coming in this way of thinking. But no, this is ultimately, it's technology. It's not a stable thing. You can add stuff on top of it. The stability that is there that you have to trust is that there can only be 21 million Bitcoin ever printed. If that could be broken, then ultimately it would be just the same as fiat money, which they can print as much money as they want, the people controlling the system. If they can do that with Bitcoin, then it's no different from them. So if you believe that 21 million is real, and it is the biggest and most secure network out there because it's focused on security, so it's not broken into and hacked like some of these others, then the larger that network grows, the more secure and the better it is for everybody. So that's why you want to make real sure that you have some Bitcoin and the other ones only secondarily, is how I look at it.
Yeah, Alex. No,
But overall, this is technology. It's not, when they say coin, it's not like, it's not like literally a coin. They're using that so you understand that it's money. But this is all technology. They can revise how it operates. But in at least in theory, they can't go in there and reset the 21 million. So, oh, well, there's so much demand. We're going to make it into – we're going to add another 21. Now it's 42 million. If they could do that, well, then in my view, you run right back to gold or something. Gold's been the traditional hard asset until now. Gold hasn't done anything because Bitcoin has a lot of advantages because you can essentially save your life force and send it anywhere in the world, and they can't steal from you by printing more of it. You see? So it says, like, my time's not wasted. It's literally saving, like, your life in one form of your life. It's a lot more real than I'm going to upload my brainwaves onto this disk and live forever. No, you do what you do. And the value you produce, you save that in Bitcoin, and then you can pass that down to your children and your descendants or whoever else you want to favor with it. And that's a very real form of living forever, right? Yeah. Whereas if you, whatever you save in dollars, you know, is being stolen away, you know, 15% a year by the Fed, the dirty Jews at the Fed. So Bitcoin seems to be the best hope, but there's a lot more that needs to be done with technology than just the stuff Bitcoin is doing. Bitcoin focuses on really security and being a giant network, and all the computers agree on the ledger, right? So everybody agrees and nobody can get in there and change it retrospectively, as they have done with Ethereum on some transactions. They can't stop it or turn it off or go back and correct it. They can't do any of that stuff. So it's solid and permanent forever. And there's a fixed number of them. That's the key. So not all of these have caps on how many there are, and they will stop it. Solana's turned it off and restarted a couple times in the past year. But, yeah, that's what I have to say. So if you bought high, just hold it and wait. That's what I'm telling you to do.
Yeah, Alex, we'll return to these topics in coming shows.
Yeah, we'll talk about almost every show, and just you know, we're going to follow it. Now, we should really be hoping that it does do what Jan said. I mean, I completely hope that it does that. I don't know that it's going to do that, but like I said, this guy said from the peaks, it's typically on average dropped 82%, and that would put it, I guess, from 69K, that would put it about 14,000 range. So that would be a typical drop, you know, 17 to 10,000, somewhere in there. So I think that'd be a very good time to buy. That would probably, but we're going to be talking to you. Well, Jan's done a lot of chart study, and he'll give you his opinion of when he thinks it has bottomed out, but he's given a falsifiable call. So what did you say again? 6 to 8 months, or by the end of the year, you think it's going to trough out? July, maybe?
I would say give it from July until the end of the year, and
basically a down year. You think it'll continue to go down?
I think it's not going to be a good year. I think it's going to be a flat to down,
or just probably more down and then flat.
I think a down and weird year, and people might be fooled from time to time thinking it'll go up, but I would be very surprised. I would be very surprised if it flies up to the 50,000-60,000. but let's watch it every month and see if I'm talking nonsense. But at least what we'll do is we'll use the charts. Let's use the charts, because the charts tell some interesting things, and we watch this thing and we see how it behaves. So
for sure. Well, we got anything else to discuss, or?
Yeah, there are some other things I wanted to ask you, Alex. I wanted to ask you stuff about Dr. William Pierce. I'm particularly interested. I'm trying to understand what his thinking was and why, because I've been doing quite a bunch of reading, and I've actually been reading a ton of different topics. We might even, if we've got time, we might even talk a bit about DNA and whites. But what I want to ask you is, I'm very fascinated on many levels in the concepts in religion and belief and so forth. And we can sit and talk about this more, but I came across mentioned, for example, that in the time of Hitler, there was a guy called, I think it's, oh goodness, I'm not sure his name. I'm not sure if it's Rosenberg. I'm not sure if it's Rosenberg. I'm not sure if it's Alfred Rosenberg. But there was one of the guys who was a Nazi thinker who began, who began to think about the need for a Germanic religion. So he apparently wrote a book on it, and apparently heavy philosophical and weird, and came to no conclusion, etc. But I think it was Rosenberg. Now, a person that I've come across and I've dug quite a bit into is is Ben Claassen. And Ben Claassen is the guy from the Church of Creativity. He's the guy who wrote the White Man's Bible. I've dug into Claassen quite a bit. Claassen also came up with Rahoa. I'm sure you know of Rahoa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And those concepts. So, and Claassen had his reasons for coming up with that, which we'll discuss later. But I have been wondering about Dr. Pierce, because Dr. Pierce did not initially and originally set out to create some kind of religion, but he did create a thing called, I think it's cosmotheism or something.
Yeah.
And he had some kind of church. And I think I've even seen a bit of a video of people like almost singing a hymn in church. By the way, there's a bunch of this stuff that also ties back to Christianity and Nietzsche. Nietzsche, when he wrote his stuff about the Superman, he did it deliberately in a biblical style, in his book Thus Spoke Zarathustra. And he did it because he figured that that maybe is what whites will go for. So he's going to write it and hide a bunch of stuff in there, and that maybe they'll take it seriously and they'll eventually find the real secret, something like that. But anyway, I'm very interested in anything you can tell me about Dr. Pierce and his religion. What was he thinking?
I think that he got the idea of cosmotheism from maybe George Bernard Shaw. I want to say all this is outlined in Fame of a Dead Man's Deeds, and I did that as an audio book. That was a book by a professor up at Vermont Aunt, Robert Griffin. Robert Griffin's book, Fame of a Dead Man's Deeds, which is a sort of microscopic and pretty thorough also, how Pierce was living day to day. And I know it's confirmed because I had the same experience with Pierce. I was only with Pierce for 8 or 9 hours one time talking to him personally when I went to meet him one day, but he also, Griffin stayed with him for, I don't know, a few months and really got to know him. And he laid it all out where all that comes from. So I'd recommend you read that if you and you can probably find that free PDF online. But I think some of that came from the idea of an evolving consciousness, and you keep ascending the ladder of self-understanding and improvement until you reach the stars. I believe that came from George Bernard Shaw or was influenced by him. But now, back on Earth, you got to understand, Pierce had been with Rockwell and other people, and he was in D.C. And so he moved from D.C. to West Virginia because there's less restrictions. You're still close to the Capitol if you need to get in there for political stuff, but you're up in the mountains and you're in an area with much less regulation where you're much comparatively freer on your property to put up buildings and stuff like that. I know he told me personally that was part of the reason he moved there, but he had gotten some number of families and flocks of people when he was in D.C. and they're trying to have it as a religion. And also a lot of that is determined by tax form. In the USA, to get certain tax advantages, you got to be 501c3, and churches wouldn't pay like tax on land. So that would be the reason he would try to like formally incorporate it. And I know that they even sued over that at one point, and because they had been ruled against, because anything that's like pro-white, no matter what you call it, they'll claim it's not a legitimate like educational association. It's not just churches, but schools and other philanthropic things would be some version of 501c3 is typically what it is. There's a couple others, but so he would have done that to get tax advantages and then have some of those people move out to that area with him. I think some did, but it never really overly took off. And that's probably where the tape is that you're seeing, where they would actually get together and sort of have quasi religious services. Not really the way I would look to go, but
okay, because
certainly the tax part is understandable. I know he sued over that, and I don't know if he won. Ended up winning eventually. I know Craig Cobb also was able to get himself declared a cosmotheist, and they got tax advantages. And maybe the Church of the Creator, I think, also had lawsuits, and they were able to get the five. See, it's a tax status, so you don't have to pay like property taxes for your church's land. And that's why there's so many. One of the reasons there's so many churches around, they have tax privileges you don't have if you're not. So that's why the feds want to forbid someone who's pro-white. Christ, they won't even let you give donations to people that they don't like. So they don't want you to have any tax advantages from declaring yourself a religion or an educational foundation. Yeah, unless, that's basically the idea.
Unless you're a Jew or you're a black.
Oh, yeah, no problem if you're. Yeah, if you're Black Lives Matter or you're totally pro-black and anti-white, they don't care. Of course you'll get it without thinking, or the Jews will get it. But there was a guy up in Canada who was trying to give the National Alliance like $250,000 or something, and they flat out stole it from him because they don't want anyone pro-white. There was absolutely no doubt the guy intended to do that, and they stole it from him.
Who's
the intercession of the SPLC or ADL? ADL or SPLC, some of them. No, they went to the court and they dragged up some distant relative and they had his will thrown out and just gave the money to someone else rather than the National Alliance. So, yeah, you have to be super – again, this ties back to Bitcoin. You got to get that money to the people you want to have it before you're incapacitated, or you absolutely better be sure. If you got seven figures, they will try to find a way in there if they know about it and steal it. So – yeah, so Pierce was basically trying to have the same law applied to his group that would be applied to every other group, and certainly every anti-white group. And if he ever succeeded in doing that, and I don't think he did, I think that's why his group and his book publishing and selling business were set up like that, like a business, because he wasn't allowed to have the natural form.
Alex, are you there?
1C3, so that they can go out and solicit donations, right? Because they can't make it as a business because there's not enough ad money. So, and he was denied the fair application. You want to talk about civil rights? He is essentially denied his civil rights out of political prejudice, backed up by the courts. Okay, so he had to function as a business when he should have been like a charitable foundation that people could donate money to. And if you're also, if you're 501c3, then you can write off your donation on your taxes. Well, the last thing the federal Zog wants is people donating to William Pierce and writing it off in their taxes. So they'll find a reason to invalidate the law wherever a pro-white organization is involved. Okay. So
okay.
That's the basis of it.
Alex, because I'll tell you what Ben Klassen was trying to do. Because that's where Matt Hale came into their thing.
Yeah, I know about all that. Yeah,
is Klassen said, but basically these people in Klassen's case and probably in Rosenberg's case, they were trying to get whites away from Christianity. They saw some kind of need for something else that can work for whites. And what Ben Klassen said specifically was that every great civilization has always had a religion. And he attributed, and I don't think he's alone in this viewpoint, he attributed the religion and the belief, the serious belief in a religion. It doesn't matter what the religion is, but when you've got a whole civilization and everybody functions on that religion becomes a not just a store of value, but it also becomes a vision of the future. And if everybody basically sees the same future and they work towards the same future, then that is where success comes from. And all great civilizations have had a religion. And that was how Klassen then came up with this concept of the white man's Bible and the Church of Creativity. Was he said, what we need, because Klassen openly said that Christianity is an enemy of our race and we need something new. And he started putting it together and he based it obviously on a lot of National Socialist things and racial things. And so I've seen some interesting quotes from Dr. Pierce. There are some odds and sods of Pierce. And by the way, that book, Alex, I will talk to you about that book afterwards. I'm very interested in that. But the basic thing is that I've seen some quotes from Pierce where Pierce is talking about like nature. And he's not just inventing stuff, he's serious. He's talking about, he says like the purpose of the government should be to carry out, you know, the will of nature, something like that. And it's to me as if he's trying to do what Klassen is doing. He's trying to bring modern science and almost saying to whites, if we live our lives in this way, this could be the real future that we could attain. And that he's starting to go into space and deep future technology, that kind of thing. That's kind of what I was wondering, if that's where he's going to.
It's conscious evolution. You're evolving into a higher and higher and higher form. Like Nietzsche's Superman, you're overcoming yourself. We're on a rope stretched over an abyss is a figure that Nietzsche used and Pierce used in one of his ADVs. We're not the thing we're going to become. And all this diversity and Jews attacking us is not making us better. It's dragging us backward. We have to overcome them and become better and overcome ourselves and sort of direct our evolution, climbing up the ladder to the stars. And that conception is not really his originally. It goes, like I said, at least George Bernard Shaw, and there's a number of other intellectual fathers of that I know Griffin talks about in Fame of a Dead Man's Deeds.
Okay, excellent. Then we are on the same path there, because I'm a big fan of Nietzsche and that rope. You know, the evolution and conscious evolution. Nice. First time I've ever heard that term, Alex. That's very interesting.
But yeah, you're right that it's in line with nature as opposed to the Semitic, you know, fancy of this other world and all this other garbage that is not the soul of our folk. We're not oriented in that way. It's a perversion, distortion of how we naturally are to worry about that kind of garbage. Yeah. And Jews like Marcus Eli Rabbage have admitted that it's not completely foreign to our way of thinking. We've had it grafted onto us and then reinforced through, you know, a couple thousand years, and it's not doing us any good. And the point we need it, if it were for us, we need it the most. It's completely failing us in every way. It's something we do have to get. I'm very anti-Christian, and it's there's good reason for it.
Yeah, Alex, the thing I, you know, what I've been asking myself for quite a long time is I've been saying to myself, you know, scientists and zoologists and stuff, when they study animals, they say like, you know, we're going to look at these lions in their natural habitat. And so a question I ask myself, and I've been asking myself this a lot, is what are white people like? What are European people like in their natural habitat? When you leave them to themselves and they are whatever they want to be, what are they? And, you know, I've been reading Roman history again, rereading Roman history, pagan stuff and so forth, because our natural selves, we're actually quite warlike. And there are many things that we are totally different to Christians. And you know what? It's like in this time period since World War II, we've forgotten who we were. We as a race were like busy awakening. Then that awakening was destroyed by the Jewish event called World War II. And now in the time of the internet, here we are, or even let's say Rockwell, Dr. Pierce, those people, slowly we rediscover and go back to what we are. We start thinking those same thoughts and we start feeling comfortable because that is actually us. And there's that study by the Jews. What's that thing, that personality thing? Thing about the sort of fascist personality.
Oh, authoritarian personality.
Yes, yes. I always forget the term authoritarian. Yes.
Yeah.
So the Jews know who we are, and they know that they must know to mislead us away from what we are.
Of course, yes. They know we like order and we like seriousness, and they lead us to frivolity and particularly sexual looseness, as the Catholic E. Michael Jones endlessly harps on. Without, he doesn't get it quite right, but he's certainly right. They use, overall, they try to get you vice-laden and obsessed with your genitals or drinking or some other ridiculous stuff, and they do away with seriousness, and they try to create a population of essentially gelded creatures who just worry about what's going in their belly or coming out of their balls, and they don't worry about the future or anything serious. And then they queer the laws in the land with feminism and through the family courts and through the media, endlessly portraying men as weak, stupid, white men as weak, stupid doofuses who are utterly de trope, unnecessary. And they put all the responsibility legally and financially on the man, and they give all the responsibility to the woman because they know she can't handle it. And they know they will burden and sink him. And this has destroyed millions of families in the U.S. and has prevented millions of others from even forming. They're also promoting women being whores and putting off having children. So everything they do is aimed to destroy white individuals and prevent them from coming together and forming a successful family. And yes, it is a deliberate racial attack. And so all the right wing that they allow, I will endlessly whine about this or that symptom, but it never ties it together comprehensively into a whole and say, look, this is just one prong in a comprehensive racial attack on whites directed by and coming from Jews. It may use queers, it may use niggers, it may use feminists, it may use whatever it finds at hand to beat us, but it's the one wielding the pitchfork and stabbing us with these individual tines. So, yeah. That's absolutely what's going on.
Well, Alex, nobody could say it better than the way you've just described it, because man, yeah, and so I'm constantly asking myself, you know, what were we? What could we be? Where would we go? And you know, like I say, we are definitely a warlike people. We're a no-nonsense people. We don't take anyone's shit. We also don't accept all kinds of weaknesses among ourselves. We're quite harsh on ourselves. But ultimately, our system works. I mean, you know, when I look at the pagans and the Romans and the things they achieved and their attitude, I was reading, and we're also getting ready to wind up as well, But Alex, I came across something that was very fascinating. I want to put it into a video. But the Romans had a kind of supremacism that went something like this. They said that for the Romans to win is as natural as water running downhill. And if the Romans aren't winning, then something is wrong. Something is very wrong. And, you know, we should actually be looking at ourselves in a similar way, because I've even looked at old videos, old movie footage from the 1920s, 1940s, 1960s, where you can see whites are predicting the future. And the future of white people is always unquestionably bright. White people never have a dark, dark, unhappy future where we're scared of the future. Our future is always bright, energetic, and thriving. But look at how our future has been. It's gone weird and creepy in a way that nobody saw coming. I mean, many people have said, like, American soldiers in World War II, British soldiers in World War II, if they had to live to this time, they would be horrified by what the world that they fought for has become. And I want to say that, you know, we should be saying, the average white person should say, if our future is not bright, if we're not moving forward and upward, something's fucking wrong. There's some Jew busy pulling some fucking strings somewhere. So anyway, so that's my statement.
Well said. That's quite right. Quite right. I mean, we are not naturally a mawkish, lugubrious race. Christianity has, again, put us into that mindset and this dreaming about some other world that obviously doesn't exist. It's pure fantasy and lottery tickets, and just strengthen people in this warped way of thinking and teaching them things that don't work, and just making them preoccupied and apprehensive and yet ineffectual and just pathetic at the same time. And why should whites be that way? They're trying to form a new race out of what was already a very good race. They're making it worse. So Christianity is the Jews' greatest success in overcoming us whites. And that is something that a lot of people who are even think of themselves as red pilled don't want to accept. And they keep trying to mix Christianity with racialism, but you cannot do that. They are opposed. They are different worldviews, and Christianity comes from Jews, and it is irremediably and intentionally, purposefully anti-white by design, created and spread by Jews among whites to destroy Rome. That's what the book of Revelation is all about. Fantasies of the destruction of Rome in exchange for, you know, Rome having whipped some of the obnoxious Jews who are acting the same way then that they do now. So, yeah, we do need to go back to our roots, but also go forward with the new technology and make use of what is there in order to liberate our people. There's no other way to put it.
Absolutely.
That's what Team White is all about. And so thanks to everybody who's listening today. And well, we covered quite a range of topics there. Mozambique Bitcoin and creation or cosmotheism. I don't think Pierce even had, I really do think that came from George Bernard Shaw. I could be wrong about that, certainly. But yeah, read Fame of a Dead Man's Deeds. I think I made an audio book out of that at some point, which is at vnnforum.com. But anyway, thanks for being with us today. And we will be back with you again for another Team White real, real soon.
Thank you very much, Alex. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.